Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover in Leviticus chapter 10 the sad death of Nadab and Abihu, Aaron's two oldest sons. Our context is this. In the last chapter, we have the priest beginning their ministry to the people. The first sin offerings are offered, the burnt offerings are offered, and so forth. The priest having been consecrated in chapter 8 and chapter 9, our last chapter, they begin their priestly duties. Unfortunately, they don't start out doing the priestly duties quite properly, as we'll see that all four of the sons of Israel, sons of Aaron, screwed up. So we start now in Leviticus 10, verses 1 and 2. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, that's the two oldest sons of Aaron, took their respective fire pans, and after putting fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Now Nadab and Abihu were mentioned a lot of places in the scriptures. I've got about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 places, so they are kind of prominent. They're famous for getting killed for offering strange fire. They took their fire pans, those were censers as the NIV translates it, ceremonial vessels containing hot coals, and burning incense was put on top of those hot coals. That was the way you normally did it. And so they placed incense on their fire in their fire pans, and they offered strange fire. The NASB is a little bit confusing when it says they put fire in the fire pans and then placed incense on it. Placed incense on the fire is what it means. The New Living Translation has this: Aaron's sons Nadab and Abihu put coals of fire in their incense burners and sprinkled incense over them. Now, what is this strange fire? The NIV has unauthorized fire, improper fire, illegal fire. That's basically what it means. Strange is the KJV way and the NASB way of translating. Again, it's kind of a strange translation, strange fire is. But it means improper. They violated the law. One of the Levitical laws was not carried out. Now, here's some options as to how Nadab and Abihu violated the law. First of all, the first option is they could have used common fire. In other words, not fire that was taken from the bronze altar of incense. This is John Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown suggest this. Remember, fire came down from out of heaven or either out of the sanctuary, depending on your view, but I think it came down out of heaven to light the fire on the bronze altar to get it started. This was in Leviticus 9:24. Then fire came out from the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the portions of fat on the altar, and when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. Now, once this fire had gotten started, the priests were supposed to take fire from the bronze altar and transfer it to the golden altar inside the holy place, inside the sanctuary, inside the tabernacle. Leviticus 16:12 says that, then he must take a fire pan full of fiery coals from the altar before the Lord, that's the bronze altar, before the Lord because it's before the tent of meeting, in front of it. They're supposed to take that fire pan full of fiery coals and two handfuls of finely ground fragrant incense and burn them inside the veil, that's on the golden altar of incense, which is placed right inside the second veil that separates the holy place from the holy of holies. So it's very clear. Legally, they were supposed to bring fire from the bronze altar and take it to the gold altar, and that's a good suggestion is what they didn't do. Now, where did they get this common fire? This is option number two. They could have just taken the fire. Well, it's not option number two. This, we're still talking about the option number one, that they used common fire. They could have taken the common fire from the cooking pots in the tabernacle, in the courtyard of the tabernacle. Remember, they have to cook grain offerings on griddles in ovens. They have to eat the sin offerings, to cook the sin offerings for the people or the leaders of the people. They have to cook the wave offerings, the breast offerings of the peace offerings, and the right foreleg of the priest of the peace offering that belonged to the priest. There's all kinds of stuff going on, all kind of cooking going on in the courtyard. They could have taken fire from that. So that's the first option. I think that's probably what it is. They just used the wrong fire. Jameson Fawcett Brown says option number two, they performed an incense service which was reserved to Aaron, the high priest. Now, to be honest with you, I'm not sure what incense service was that. Jameson Fawcett Brown also suggests that Nadab and Abihu might have gone into the Holy of Holies, but I have a problem with that. There's no incense offered in the Holy of Holies. It could be they were trying to put it on the golden altar of incense at the doorway of the Holy of Holies and kind of wandered in through the door and gotten too far in there. Those are all possibilities, but I think the easiest way is to say they used the wrong fire. They used common fire instead of fire from the bronze altar. Here's option number four of what they could have done. This is from gotquestions.org. They could have gotten drunk. Maybe they took the right fire and put the incense in the right place on the golden altar without going into the Holy of Holies. They might have done that right, but they might have been drunk while they were doing it. A lot of commentators suggest this. This comes from verses 8 and 9 of our chapter in Leviticus 10. The Lord spoke to Aaron, "You and your sons are not to drink wine or beer when you enter the tent of meeting, or else you will die. This is a permanent statute throughout your generations." In other words, the law might have given after the drunken priest, Nadab and Abihu, went into the holy place. It might have been given at that moment because they were drunk, perhaps. I tend to think it's just they offered the wrong fire. Now, Nadab and Abihu died for their transgressions, and the first question we ask is not this a little harsh? Well, this was at the inauguration of the Old Testament order, and as the NIV Study Bible says, things had to be strict to make a deep impression on the rebellious people. Here's a quote from that study Bible. Quote, "The new community had to be made aware that it existed for God and not vice versa." I have no problem with that sentiment. I know it's a little rough, but I mean, did he go to heaven? Probably so. Leviticus 10:3 says this. So Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord meant when he said, I will show my holiness to those who are near me, and I will reveal my glory before all the people." But Aaron remained silent. In other words, hey, I killed him. That's because I'm showing my glory. You don't mess with God's glory. You don't mess with his holiness. You don't take things lightly, whether by getting drunk or by completely disobeying my commands about how that fire was to be handled. Now, here are some factors that called for severe punishment. First of all, Nadab and Abihu had just been invested as priests. They were supposed to set an example. They were sons of the high priest. That they were killed showed God was not interested in nepotism. He didn't care who they were the sons of. They violated the law. And then, of course, if they were drunk, that's even more of a factor that would call for severe punishment. Now, note that they died regardless of their intentions. I mean, they could have been negligent. They could have been overzealous, but they nevertheless had good intentions. Or they could have deliberately chosen to violate the law of God. Or they could have been drunk and did it, which I guess would be negligently, but they intentionally got drunk. So there's all kinds of ways you can look at their heart attitude when they went in there. I tend to think, as we'll see later on in this chapter, I tend to think that they went in there with strange fire on purpose. They didn't care. We'll talk about that later. Now, what was the fire that killed them? Well, here's two options. It could have been lightning from the sky. We'll see later on in verses 4 and 5 that their bodies and their tunics were preserved. And that's a good option because lightning will kill people and they look just like they're sleeping in bed when they're killed. You can't tell the body's burnt. You can't tell the clothes are burned. Option number two is to how the fire killed them. It could have been the Shekinah glory erupting from the Holy of Holies. Now that would make sense because probably Nadab and Abihu would be in the holy place at the golden altar of incense offering incense. Now, some commentators say they were offering this incense in the courtyard. Well, they could have been blasted by the Shekinah glory coming out of the Holy of Holies in the courtyard too, for that matter. But I tend to think they were at the golden altar of incense, and so the Shekinah glory could have gotten them. Or it could have been when they came out with their censers, lightning struck them from above. However it happened, by fire they sinned, and by fire they died, as Ellicott trenchantly notes. Now, it says in verse 2, there's a word here that's translated a little funny. It says they were consumed. Fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them. Well, we're going to see that their bodies and that their clothes were preserved in the next couple of verses, so consumed is perhaps not translated the best. Ellicott and Benson, the two commentators, says the Hebrew word means their lives were destroyed. It doesn't mean their bodies were burnt up. Jameson Fawcett Brown says it means that God killed them and didn't consume them and eat their bodies and clothes up. We go down to Leviticus 10:3, and then Moses said to Aaron, "It is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy, and before all the people, I will be honored." So Aaron, therefore, kept silent. Now, as John Gill says, Moses spoke to Aaron to keep him quiet and humble at this terrible time. You can imagine Aaron's not happy about this. He could have been grieving. He could have been complaining. He could have said something in his grief that would have been disrespectful to God and a bad example to the people. But Moses preempts that and says, hey, all this death, as bad as you might take it to be, is because God said, I will be treated as holy. So remember that, Aaron, God's holy, and your sons died because they violated the holiness of God. So be quiet, he implies, and Aaron, as a matter of fact, was quiet. Moses says to Aaron, it is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, that's referring to the priests because they come near to the Holy of Holies where God lives. Aaron kept silent. John Gill says the Septuagint translates it this way, was in a stupor. So Aaron, therefore, was in a stupor. Thunderstruck, John Gill says, that probably puts a little bit more emotion to it. That's one option. He was thunderstruck, or Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown suggest another option. Maybe he was just stoically accepting the justice of God. He was in shock, or he just bit his tongue and said, God's just. My son sinned, and I'm just going to have to suck it up. We go to verses 4 and 5 of Leviticus 10. Moses called also to Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Aaron's uncle Uzziel, and said to them, come forward, carry your relatives away from the front of the sanctuary to the outside of the camp. So they came forward and carried them still in their tunics to the outside of the camp, as Moses had said. Now these relatives of Nadab and Abihu are Nadab and Abihu's second cousins. Now I hate to go through genealogy here, but let's do a little bit. Aaron's father was a guy named Amram. Amram had a brother, Uzziel, which is mentioned here, Aaron's uncle Uzziel, in verse 4. Now, Uzziel had four sons. Two of those sons were Mishael and Elzaphan, who are mentioned here. So, the sons of Aaron's uncle are Aaron's first cousins. And since Nadab and Abihu were Aaron's sons, that makes Mishael and Elzaphan second cousins. Nadab and Abihu's second cousins were Mishael and Elzaphan. Now, interestingly, this is getting into the weeds a little bit too much, but the commentator Ellicott's referring to Exodus 6:18, which reads this, the sons of Kohath, Amram, that's Aaron's father, and Izhar and Hebron and Uzziel, that's Aaron's uncle, because if Amram is Aaron's father and Amram is Uzziel's brother, then Uzziel is Aaron's uncle. But now, it was Uzziel's sons who carried the bodies out, and there were other uncles available, older uncles, Izhar and Hebron. Ellicott's, they were passed over because their children were involved in Korah's rebellion and had a bad attitude. And Ellicott speculates that the children of Izhar and Hebron began to show itself when they witnessed all the imposing ceremonies of the consecration. Well, that's a nice speculation. But at any rate, or it just could be, they were more available. Who knows? Uzziel's kids carried them out. Now, the interesting thing is, Moses could have said, hey, Eleazar and Ithamar, you're Nadab and Abihu's brothers, you carry them out. Well, but maybe Moses wanted to spare Aaron's close relatives. That's pretty rough, carrying your brothers out as a corpse. So, here were Moses' constraints. He wanted to spare Aaron's close relatives, the brothers Eleazar and Ithamar. He didn't want to grieve. How about the father, Amram, Aaron's father? That's pretty close. That's granddad. Moses didn't bother Amram. Now, he could have gotten Aaron's uncles, Izhar and Hebron, or maybe their children, but those are in Aaron's family line. They're close relatives of Aaron, and so he left those alone. The second constraint Moses had, he wanted to avoid relatives with rebellious attitudes. For example, Izhar and Hebron, those were his uncles, Aaron's uncles, and their sons. So he leaves that out, but he still had to get member of Aaron's family because priests were necessary to go into the holy place where Nadab and Abihu probably were. They could have been killed in the courtyard. But even in the courtyard, you're going to need priests to handle this. And so Moses had to get members of Aaron's family. So he couldn't get members that were too close because to spare them the grief. He couldn't get members of Aaron's family who were going to have rebellious attitudes. But they did have to be in Aaron's family, so he did it. Mishael and Elzaphan satisfied all the constraints. They weren't Aaron's close relatives. They're only second cousins. They didn't have rebellious attitudes, according to Ellicott, and they were members of Aaron's family. Now it says in verse 4, Moses says to Mishael and Elzaphan, carry your relatives away from the front of the sanctuary. Well, what is the sanctuary? Well, if it's the Holy of Holies, then the front of the sanctuary would be the holy place where the candlestick and the presence bread is. and that would be where they carried him from. Or if it's the sanctuary referring to the whole tabernacle, it would be from the courtyard. So, well, like I say, it's just not clear exactly where Nadab and Abihu died. They were told to take the corpses outside of the camp. Remember, you got the courtyard, and then you go into the camp where the people live, then you go outside of the camp where the trash heaps are, where bodies were buried and trash was thrown. That's obvious, for obvious reasons, because corpses are unclean. You got to get unclean things outside of the holy place, out of the holy sanctuary, out of the courtyard. Now, by the fact that Nadab and Abihu's bodies were carried by Mishael and Elzaphan outside the camp, everybody would have seen those bodies going through the camp, and everybody would have said, oh my gosh, what has happened here? They would have realized that God was holy. We go to Leviticus 10, verses 6 through 7. Then Moses said to Aaron and to his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, do not uncover your heads nor tear your clothes, so that you will not die, and that he will not become wrathful against all the congregation. But your kinsmen, the whole house of Israel, shall bewail the burning which the Lord has brought about. You shall not even go out from the doorway of the tent of meeting, or you will die. For the Lord's anointing oil is upon you. So they did according to the word of Moses. So Moses in verse 6 forbids Eleazar and Ithamar, the two remaining younger sons of Nadab and Abihu, he forbids them to mourn. He says, don't take off your priestly bonnets, don't uncover your heads. That would be a sign of mourning, just like tearing the clothes would be. And Moses says, you don't do either one. You don't tear your clothes, you don't uncover your head, because by golly, you're not going to mourn for your two brothers. And he says, if you do mourn for your two brothers, you're going to die. So keep your hat on so you'll not die. Don't tear your clothes. Keep your shirt on so you won't die. And not only you won't die, God might become wrathful, will become wrathful against the whole congregation. Because you're a priest, you recognize, you represent more than yourself. You represent the whole congregation, and it could be bad, bad trouble. You start mourning. Because when you start mourning for somebody that violated the holiness of God, that means you're condoning it. Now, Moses did allow the kinsmen, the whole house of Israel, to bewail the burning. So they started mourning. But were they mourning the death of Nadab and Abihu, or were they rather mourning the sin of Nadab and Abihu that provoked the judgment? Perhaps they were mourning for fear that more judgment might come, as John Gill says. Verse 7 says, you shall not, Moses says to Eleazar and Ithamar, you shall not even go out from the doorway of the tent of meeting. That means just right in the courtyard, right in front of the tabernacle. You don't leave the courtyard, in other words, because all the people are mourning in the camp, in their homes, in their tents. And if you want to go out there and mourn with them, you're going to die. Why? Because the Lord's anointing oil is upon you. In other words, because you're a priest, you have a certain rank, and with rank comes responsibility. You go out there and start mourning, it's going to look like the priests are putting up with this violation of God's holy commandments. So they, Eleazar and Ithamar, did according to the word of Moses. They remained silent, just like Aaron, their father, remained silent, and they didn't mourn. There's another thing that would be bad. If they left, they would leave the service of the sanctuary unattended. Remember, this is the first ceremony, first sacrificial service of the temple priest for the whole people, and you're just going to leave and just completely ruin or leave the service unattended? No. Why? Moses says in verse 7, because the Lord's anointing oil is upon you. That's why you don't go out. All right, it's two reasons you don't go out. One, you don't go out and mourn for people who spit in the face of God by showing their disrespect of him. That's point number one. And point number two, the Lord's anointing oil is on you. That means you're a priest, and priests need to hang around to take care of the temple. We go now to verses 8 through 11 in Leviticus 10. The Lord then spoke to Aaron, saying, do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you, when you come into the tent of meeting, so that you will not die. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the unclean and the clean, and so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them through Moses. Notice now that the Lord is speaking to Aaron, not Moses. All the way through the book of Leviticus is God speaking to Moses, God speaking to Moses. But now Aaron's the high priest, so now God's speaking to Aaron. And of course he tells him not to get drunk. Do not drink wine or strong drink, nor your sons when you come to the tent of meeting. It's like drinking and driving, drinking and priesting, you don't do it. Now that doesn't say that you can't drink wine outside the sanctuary or outside the court of the courtyard of the sanctuary, in your house, in your tent. Doesn't say anything about drinking at home, but here it's even moderate drinking, not even social drinking, no drinking when you're doing your temple service. Apparently God wanted to keep the service completely divorced from any sins of drunkenness, and if you're not drinking, you're not going to get drunk. Might be a fine line between drinking moderately and drinking to excess. I don't know what kind of strong drink they had back then in Israel in these times of the tabernacle, on the times of the Exodus. But the reason that the prohibition was given here, many think, is because Nadab and Abihu were drunk when they sinned, offering strange fire, and so that's why the prohibition was given here. That's a speculation. This, of course, not drinking while doing priestly service, is a perpetual statute. That just means as long as the temple system is there, the tabernacle slash temple system is there, you don't drink while you are a priest. That's done away with, of course, when Jesus comes and does away with the Old Testament apparatus. Now, the purpose of this not drinking is, verse 10, so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane. Profane, you can drink moderately in your house, but holy is different. It's different. Now, John Gill and Adam Clark say a drunken priest would not be able to distinguish the clean and the unclean, and so that's why the not drinking makes a distinction between the holy and profane, because it lets the priest know that they're not supposed to carry fire from the cooking pots into the golden altar, etc., etc., etc. They might get the pieces of the sacrifices mixed up. It's all kind of things they could do to violate the Levitical law, so they don't need to be drunk by doing it. Or it just could be because God wants to distinguish sober people from drunk people. Again, that's one more way of distinguishing the holy and the profane. This idea of distinguishing the holy and the profane is everywhere in the Old Testament. I'm going to give you three examples here from Ezekiel. Ezekiel 22:26, her priests have done violence to my law and have profaned my holy things. They have made no distinction between the holy and the profane, and they have not taught the difference between the unclean and the clean. Ezekiel 42:20, he measured it on the four sides and had a wall all around, the length 500, the width 500, to divide between the holy and the profane. This is referring to the so-called ideal temple of Ezekiel. But even the ideal temple, which was a temple that Ezekiel saw in a vision, even then the purpose was to divide between the holy and the profane. Holy itself means separate, separate from the world, separate from the profane, consecrated to God. Ezekiel 44:23, moreover, they shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. Teaching the people mentioned here in Ezekiel, that's what priests did. They taught. And verse 11 says this in Leviticus 10, so as to teach the sons of Israel by not getting drunk while you're doing your priestly service. This is to teach the sons of Israel. A drunken priest couldn't teach properly, as John Gill says, but also his example is what teaches. A drunken priest does not give a good teaching example of how you distinguish the holy and the profane. Notice all this talk about teaching illustrates the fact that the tabernacle ritual was a great way to teach about the coming of the Messiah. All those Old Testament things were given to us as in samples, as the King James has it, given to us as examples to teach us about the coming of the Messiah. Leviticus 10, verses 12 through 13, we move on. Then Moses spoke to Aaron and to his surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, take the grain offering that is left over from the Lord's offering by fire and eat it unleavened beside the altar, for it is most holy. You shall eat it, moreover, in a holy place, because it is your due and your son's due out of the Lord's offerings by fire, for thus I have been commanded. Now, Moses is just repeating other regulations of Leviticus, which we've already gone over, but he repeats them. And why does he repeat them? Well, Jameson Fawcett Brown says that Moses may have been concerned that Aaron and his sons, in their grief, may have overlooked some duties that they were supposed to do. Now, the grain offering that's left over, remember they took the grain mixed with oil, took a handful of it, put it on the altar, and then most of the grain offering was left over, and then they took it back into the courtyard and cooked it either in an oven, a hole in the ground with plaster around it, or on a griddle, flat piece of iron over a fire, or in a pan, which was a utensil with edges around it over the fire. Three ways of cooking that grain offering, but it was supposed to be cooked, and it was leftovers, if you will, leftover from the memorial portion that went up to God on the altar by fire. All of these grain offerings were unleavened here. It is most holy. That means it transferred its holiness to anybody that touched it. Verse 13, you shall eat it in a holy place. That's not talking about the place where the lampstand was and the bread of the presence was. It's talking about in the courtyard. That's where the priest ate the sacrifices. Verse 13 says, it's your due. Now, when it says your due, it means only Aaron and the sons. They could not take any of the grain offering home to their wives and their daughters and to their unconsecrated young sons. And something tells me I might have said in a previous audio they could do that with the grain offering. If I did, I apologize to Mr. Gill because he says, no, the wives and daughters could not eat at home. I actually am not sure about that. Every commentator I looked at, and I looked at a lot of them, of course, they don't mention the problem. John Gill mentions it. He's quoting a rabbi, Aben Ezra, who says that the grain offering is not carried out of the courts of the sanctuary. So we'll take his word for it since I can't find any other authority on that. We do know that the peace offering, the breast of the peace offering, the thighs of the peace offering could be taken out of the courtyard and eaten at home with the wives and the daughters and the unconsecrated sons. They could eat that. We go now to Leviticus 10, verses 14 and 15. The breast of the wave offering, however, and the thigh of the offering you may eat in a clean place, you and your sons and your daughters with you, for they have been given as your due and your sons' due out of the sacrifices of the peace offerings of the sons of Israel. The thigh offering by lifting up and the breast offering and the breast offered by waving, they shall bring along with the offerings by fire of the portions of fat to present as a wave offering before the Lord. So it shall be a thing perpetually due you and your sons with you, just as the Lord has commanded. Now the breast and the thigh of the peace offering are very well known. These were parts of the peace offerings that belonged to the priest and his family. Remember, these pieces were eaten along with the other parts of the animal with the offeror of the animal. And the priest could take leftover portions back home for his priest and his family for his sustenance. I suppose the way that worked was is the fellowship meal was eaten with the priest and the offeror's family and the poor. And they ate the rest of the animal, but the particular breast and right foreleg was taken home so the priest could have something to feed his family. We read that in Leviticus 7:34, for I have taken the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the contribution from the sons of Israel from the sacrifices of their peace offerings and have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons as their due forever from the sons of Israel. Now, why is the breast called a wave offering? Because Leviticus says the breast should be waved before the altar. That means moved from left to right in front of the altar. And the breast was given to Aaron and his sons, in other words, to the priest. The thigh was the right foreleg, and it was heaved, lifted up to the altar. Instead of waved left to right, it was lifted bottom to top. And that heave offering was the right foreleg, and that was for the officiating priest. Now notice that this breast and thigh of the peace offering, which could be any animal really, it had to be eaten in a clean place, verse 14, Leviticus 10. Well, a clean place, well, it could be the courtyard, of course, but would the people, the sons and the daughters, come into the courtyard? I don't think so. I don't think that women were allowed in the courtyard. So the clean place would be outside the courtyard into the camp of the Israelites where people lived and where the priests lived, and they could take it home to their sons and their daughters, the breast and the thigh. So I'm assuming, until I learn otherwise, that the offeror and the priest ate the flesh of the animal in the courtyard. Or it could actually, it probably was outside the courtyard in the camp somewhere. I'm not really sure about that either, but I think it would be in the camp. And likewise, the breast and the wave offering was taken home so that the priest could eat it with his family. So the offeror and his family ate with the priest. The flesh of the animal in general, particularly the breast and the right foreleg, was taken home by the priest to eat with his family in a clean place outside the courtyard. Now, verse 15, it says, the thigh is offered by lifting up. That's the NESB translation. King James has heaved. I like that, the heave offering. Well, heave, when you heave something, you lift it up. And the breast offering is waved. Interestingly enough, let's look at some translations of these two types of offerings. Remember, these are not two types of offerings. They're two methods of presenting the offerings. And they're always, I say always, most of the time at least, referring to the special pieces of the peace offering that belong to the priest, namely the thigh and the right foreleg. So Leviticus 10:15 in the Home of Christian Study Bible says they are to bring the thigh of the contribution. King James says the heave offering, and the breast of the presentation. The King James has the wave offering. So the motions that are involved are a little bit obscure here. I did read some scholarly discussion on what exactly a heave and a wave offering was, and apparently there's some dispute about it, but I'm just going to take heave as lift and wave as to move from side to side. Leviticus 10:15, our verse here in the King James, says the heave shoulder for the contribution of the thigh, the heave shoulder, and the wave breast. That's the breast of the presentation, according to Holman Christian Study Bible. King James has the wave breast. The New American Bible has, as the contribution or the heave shoulder, has the leg of the raised offering. Raised, that means heave. If you heave something, you lift it up. Well, enough of that. The thigh offering by lifting up and the breast offering by waving up, they shall bring along with offerings to present as a wave offering before the Lord. They refers to the sons of Israel, most probably not the priest. They're bringing the offerors or bringing the animal. So it shall be a thing perpetually do you. That means as long as the Old Testament Levitical system lasts, the priest get their portion, just as the Lord commanded. We go now to Leviticus 10, verses 16 through 18. But Moses searched carefully for the goat of the sin offering, and behold, it had been burned up. So he was angry with Aaron's surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, saying, "Why did you not eat the sin offering at the holy place? For it is most holy, and he gave it to you to bear away the guilt of the congregation to make atonement for them before the Lord. Behold, since its blood has not been brought inside into the sanctuary, you should certainly have eaten it in the sanctuary just as I commanded." Now this verse, these verses, on first blush, seem a little complicated, but actually they're not. First of all, we got to remember, when you have a goat for a sin offering, sin offerings had special animals for, depending upon for whom the sin offering was being made. Now, goats were made for the sins of the leaders and of the people and for the sins of the common people. If it was a male goat, the sin offering was for the leaders of the people. A female goat was for a common person. Now, these goat sin offerings for the leaders and common people, their blood was only sprinkled on the four horns of the bronze altar. Now, if you had a sin offering for the priest, the anointed priest, or for the whole congregation, it was a bull, and the bull's blood was spread not only on the four horns of the bronze altar, but it was also taken into the holy place and sprinkled on the, or smeared on the four horns of the golden altar, as well as being sprinkled before the veil. So those are some big distinctions there. Well, we look here, we see a goat, so we know that this is an offering either for the leaders of the people or for the people in general, sins of the people in general. And apparently, it's not talking about all the people, because that would be a bull. So apparently, some individual had brought a goat for a sin offering and it had not been eaten. Because we remember, you don't burn up the sin offering. The priest eat the sin offering for the people. For a person, for a common person, or for a leader of the people, the priest eats that in the courtyard. The only part of the sin offering that's burnt up is the fat. That goes up on the altar to God. The rest of it, the priest eat. And they didn't eat. Eleazar and Ithamar didn't eat the meat of the sin offering. So God got angry at that. Well, now Eleazar and Ithamar have been through a rough day. They've seen their brothers toasted and killed and carried out dead, and now they're being chastised because they didn't eat the sin offering. Moses asked them, "Why did you not eat the sin offering at the holy place?" Now, that doesn't mean inside the tabernacle in the place where the bread of the presence and the seven-branch candlestick was. No, it means in the courtyard of the tabernacle. For it is most holy, the sin offering is. It actually imparts holiness to people when they touch it. It's a serious thing, guys, and you didn't eat it. Now, verse 18 is a little strange. Moses says, "Behold, since his blood has not been brought inside," and you think, well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, what he's saying is there's two types of sin offering. There's the type where the blood is brought inside the holy place and sprinkled on the horns of the golden altar. That would be a bull for the high priest or a bull for the whole congregation. But that's not what we've got here. Since this blood has not been brought inside, that means we have the goat sin offerings, which are for the leaders of the people or for an individual common person. And in that situation, when you have goat sin offerings, not for the high priest or for the whole congregation, but you have goat sin offerings for elders, for the people, individual people, that blood is not taken into the sanctuary. So he's saying, since the blood has not been brought inside, therefore we have sin offerings for the leaders and common people. And those sin offerings, according to the rules, are supposed to be eaten in the courtyard. If you have a sin offering of a bull for the high priest or for the whole congregation, those sin offerings were totally burnt outside the camp and the priest didn't eat anything. But these were not that type. These were the type of sin offerings that the blood had not been brought inside. So that means they were a goat sin offering in which, or of which, the priest should eat the flesh in the courtyard. And you didn't do it. You should certainly have eaten it in the sanctuary just as I commanded. Now we ask the question, why did Moses unload on the sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, and not on Aaron? Aaron's in charge. He's the high priest. Well, John Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say Aaron was so overwhelmed with grief. He's lost his two sons. They've been toasted. And so he's not in shape to deal with his sons. So Moses takes it up with the sons. Now, why did the sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, not eat the goat sin offering like they were supposed to? One would think that the object lesson of Nadab and Abihu getting toasted would have made them be more careful, as John Gill points out. Quote, he says, Gill says, since the eating of the sin offering of the people was of so great importance and consequence, the neglect of it by the priest was very blameworthy. Yes, it was. They should have done it. Adam Clark says there's some possible mitigating circumstances. The confusion brought about by the death of Nadab and Abihu might have made them a little less attentive to their Levitical duties. But Moses is upset. He's got reason to be. He's already seen two of the priests, and they would have been future high priests when Aaron died. He's seen them fried. And so now he says, my gosh, after that, you guys didn't eat the sin offering, Eleazar and Ithamar, like you were supposed to? We go now, just like I commanded you earlier, he had commanded them in Leviticus 6, verse 26. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. It shall be eaten in a holy place, talking about the courtyard of the tabernacle, in the court of the tent of meeting. We go down to Leviticus 10, 19 through 20, and we'll finish this chapter. But Aaron spoke to Moses, behold, this very day they presented their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord. When things like these happened to me, if I had eaten a sin offering today, would it have been good in the sight of the Lord? When Moses heard that, it seemed good in his sight. Well, Aaron apparently had overheard Moses talking to Eleazar and Ithamar, and he kind of puts himself in their place to say, look, you complained about the priest not eating the sin offering. What about me? Do you think it'd be good for me to eat a sin offering on the day that my sons have gotten wiped out? Now, the things that happened to me today, I think, is referring to the death of Nadab and Abihu. As the NIV Study Bible says, the NIV Study Bible says that could have been something else that made Aaron ceremonially unclean, but I don't think so. What he's saying to me, he says, hey, would it have been good after my two sons have been wiped out to eat a sin offering? Because I'd be in mourning. So here's his argument. It's not good for a mourner to be eating a sin offering. And since Eleazar and Ithamar are mourning too, why should they have eaten a sin offering? The circumstances are different here, Moses. This is not your typical situation. Well, quite frankly, if I were Moses, I wouldn't have bought that argument, having seen how strict God was about his Levitical rules. But Moses, on the contrary, in verse 20, when Moses heard that, it seemed good in his sight. He said, yeah, you make a good argument, Aaron. Now, Moses realized Aaron had acted sincerely by not eating or by excusing Eleazar and Ithamar, who didn't eat. He was not acting in ignorance. He was not acting in rebellion like Nadab and Abihu probably were. In fact, I mentioned earlier that I was going to make the case that Nadab and Abihu had acted in rebellion. The reason being is because they were killed, Eleazar and Ithamar are not. So there's probably some mitigating circumstances there. Here's another mitigating circumstances. Some sin offerings were actually supposed to be burnt up, the bull sin offerings for the priests and for the whole congregation. And this is the first time that these offerings are being presented, and so it was easy to make a mistake like this. I'm telling you, having gone through these Levitical laws, this is enough to drive you crazy. It'd be real easy to make a mistake. So Aaron's in mourning. There could have been a mistake about what the sin offering, goat sin offering, was supposed to happen to it. Eleazar and Ithamar in mourning. So Moses cut them some slack. God cut them some slack. He didn't kill Eleazar and Ithamar. They're still around. In fact, they're going to be, as we go through the Pentateuch, we'll see that Eleazar and Ithamar end up being high priest in their due time. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finished Leviticus chapter 10 on the demise of Nadab and Abihu. We are now prepared to move to Leviticus 11, and we'll talk about clean and unclean animals. Hope to see you next time. Hope you enjoyed this audio.